to Faith Uncut podcast, where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And Nicholas Gaines is rejoining us after a very emotional, very lovingly put together episode of Faith Uncut, where we were able to open up some things that we had not been expecting to do during this podcast. So welcome back, Nick.
Woo.
Thank you. Thank
you so much. We forgive you, Psycho.
I mean,
it was wonderful. It was an experience. That was an experience.
So we want to say happy birthday to Nick. It is Nick's birthday today. Today we're recording this, and we love you, and we wanted to celebrate you today, not necessarily by making you work, but we're good, glad, happy to see you.
We just need a little piece of time.
a little piece of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Nick, why did you do that?
Chaos. Literally chaos. That's what you do. You walk in.
Man, it was so rude in a very beautiful sort of way. But gosh, I was like, wow. He just gonna walk in here and do that. All right.
I mean, we just are getting started with this one. The day's not over. The night is still young.
Oh, Jesus, help me.
You thought you were going to have me work on my birthday and I not bring you some chaos?
Oh,
I got more.
Oh, my God. So I think last episode, just for the people who missed it, we walked through some of the issues with parenting, maybe during a pandemic, how this event has affected all of us, to include our children. And then Nick walked us through this idea that he has of reparenting, and that is revisiting some of the things that we experienced as we were growing up, maybe some of the things that we missed out on that we wish that we had, and how that is starting to or continues to affect us. And so we were asked some very introspective questions about what it is. And for me, I guess one of the things that really struck a chord with me was asking about what it is that I was missing, what was missing or not being said to me as I was a child, and how that's affecting me. And because I had recently lost my mom in 2019, I was thinking through a lot of this period where my mom wasn't as present as I needed her to be. And we usually plan these podcasts out and we have a script and an outline, and it's very detailed, and none of that was in the outline.
Yeah.
And so as I'm thinking through,
deep church was not on the outline. Laying out on the altar was missing from the outline.
Right. So being present in the moment, I'm listening to these questions and I'm thinking through the questions and I'm like, oh my God, man, what is happening to me right now?
I am a mess.
Yeah.
But no, it was a wonderful thing. I think for me, it was the guided conversation on the fact that that wound exists. So I won't say legitimize. I just feel like people carry stuff so very close to them and they don't always know how to articulate it. And then that seemed to be a walkthrough of language that can unearth those feelings very gently. You know, that can be so jarring for somebody to acknowledge how far back a wound goes and how in their adulthood, people might not be in a position or even in a mind state to apologize for what's already occurred. Your intent has nothing to do with your impact. So I just found it that the language unearthed and soothed over some things that helped me understand that it's better to want to heal than to have feel good. You know, just settling for feeling good, doing the longer version, the longer work of healing is worth it.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times when we think about childhood wounds, right? Like, we didn't get to pick the parents that we grew up with. We were given. But without healing our childhood wounds and subsequently forgiving our parents, we stay emotionally stuck at the age of our earliest wounds.
Yeah.
And because this causes us to repeat that cycle of suffering, we literally keep experiencing an adult version of our childhood wounds. For example, if you haven't forgiven your mom for missing your 10th birthday party or healed from those resulting feelings of abandonment, whatever the issue is triggered by a current day experience. So if someone forgets to call you or someone doesn't show up when you need them to, or you're depending on a loved one to do something for you, the original emotional wound is activated and you drop into this unconscious reaction. And so basically, for all intents and purposes, you become your wounded 10-year-old self. And because you feel the same pain you felt then, you react by lashing out or you shut down in your adult body.
I see how that happens. And not being aware of it a lot of times makes it worse because you are not necessarily aware of what's going on internally. You just know that these are the feelings that are occurring. And then mm-hmm. for someone else who you may be in conversation with, relationship with, et cetera, you have no hope of explaining to them, you know, parent, child, you know, romantic partner, whatever. You have no way of letting them know what's going on with you because you haven't figured it out yet. And it's just, it's really important. And I think specifically with what we were talking through last time, part of the grieving process with my mom is the time when I needed her to be there and she couldn't be there, understanding that she was dealing with her own stuff during that time and allowing for that to happen in a way that that maybe I was too young and immature to understand at the time. And so now hearing what you were asking, it wasn't to assign or assess blame for that parent not being there. It's really just to understand how it affected you, how it continues to affect you, me in this case. And now what do we do with it?
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of times when we think about forgiveness, and when I talk about forgiveness, especially when we talk about things that have wronged us, people that have wronged us, maybe systems that have wronged us, I'm not excusing what's happened. But forgiveness doesn't excuse somebody's behavior or what they did or how it made you feel or even how it impacts your life. Forgiveness provides closure. And that closure ends your attachment to the situation so that you can actually move on and heal and reconcile the relationship or redefine, you know, what appropriate boundaries are going to be or redirect your energy to focus on something else.
Right.
Okay, so Nick, you do the work that we started last time and you start to identify some of these things that are missing or that you were missing. So once you identify those things, let's say, for instance, I think one of the examples that you gave was someone being able to hug you and understand and let you know that you were loved in that moment, missing an event, et cetera. Once you realize that those things are there, the event's over. So now what do we do with the missing piece?
I think that that's an important question. First of all, I think that, you know, the work in moving forward is important. But in order to move forward, you have to look back to understand how it impacted you, which is what we talked about on the last podcast, right? But it's also this centering of awareness around the fact that hurt and misery are not your entirety. Right? That brokenness and being broken about these events and how they impacted you is not your final destination. Trauma, the things that have happened to you beyond your control, don't have to be your narrative. And that pain and being in pain because of the things that happened to you is not your identity. Pain is not your identity. And so I think a lot of times what ends up happening for us is that we get used to in our adult life of being able to fall back and make pain our identity. And the fact of this is why I'm the way this is because this happened to me. My mom wasn't there. My mom always called me ugly, which is why I always do this. And it's like, so we've made the pain of what we experience our identity. And we literally use that as both an explanation for how we act and also a catalyst for how we treat people. And so it's important, I think, moving forward in this, in that in order to tell a new story, we have to realize that our life is ours and ours alone, and that you are responsible for you and making sure that you love yourself and heal and work to create healthy boundaries with those in your life, especially your loved ones and your family.
These things tend to come up when we're in relationship or attempting to be in relationship with each other. These are things that I've, you know, discussed with friends and with, you know, like groups who are in therapy, who are trying to communicate better ways of getting along because they're getting in touch with these very individualized experiences. But they're coming in contact with it because how they behave in close contact with somebody else is lifting it up, pushing it out, right? So if I only entertain strangers, then all of those strangers are not aware of the pattern. But when you start to entertain somebody every day, so this is why the intended permanency of that parenting relationship. And I say intended because you have just as many people suffering because the parent was present as you do because they were absent. And it's the absence within the context of the expectation that they wouldn't be has wreaked havoc. And you see that happening. And we mentioned a couple times, you know, because mom didn't show up or mom didn't do. There's also the reasons why people did not, you know, do the things that we had hoped that they would do for us. And, you know, daddies and girls, daddies and daughters is important because then you come into intimacies and you realize that you're not well equipped. You're not well equipped for relationship just based on your gender or your sexual expression. You are no more equipped for a relationship because you are a straight female than you are a gay male. Mm-hmm. If you have wounds, you have wounds. If you have voids and distances and understanding, those are still present. And I think that a great many people spend their adulthood trying to figure out where it all got knotted up.
Yes. Yes. And I think to your point that we are, you know, as human beings, we're hardwired for connection, mm-hmm. but when we're stuck in our patterns. We are stuck protecting and insulating ourselves instead of connecting to others outside of ourselves. And so that's what makes it hard to then be in relationship with other people, whether that's platonic or that's familial or professional or romantic, because we're still stuck in this way of protecting ourselves. I want to just break down really quickly kind of some of the ways that that happens, just so that we can kind of understand like our pathology around this, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have the first layer is your inner child, okay? So the inner child is pure and innocent. It's a part of the human psyche that houses our laughter and our joy and our curiosity, our adventure, and our childlike feelings and emotions. But our inner child also houses all of our unresolved emotional experiences. So remember, as I said earlier, that when we're stuck at our earliest wounds. So if you are stuck at the earliest wound, those unresolved emotional experiences are the inner child. And the inner child triggered when your adult self, when your present adult self, doesn't get what your inner child needed, which again is why I spend so much time, and even in this conversation, focusing on the inner child, because unless we sit and make room and space for the inner child, we're never going to get to be able to be the fully healed adult self, mm-hmm. right? So you've got that part of you, okay? That's one layer. The next layer is the inner critic. The inner critic is a composite, an amalgamation of the narrative that comes from your parents. We've talked a lot about parents, but there's also your teachers, your partners, your ex-husband, your ex-wife, your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend, your friends, the culture, the society at large, even the church. Those are also stuck in your psyche. And so while we're trying to do this healing work, you might find like there's resistance in trying to do that. And that's because you're battling the inner child as well as the inner critic. And the inner critic is really all the other voices that are around you. But then we also have, on top of that, this thing called the protective inner parent, which is a mixture of how you are parented. And those are imprinted on the inner child. And so those then, this is where we might get a little deep. So take a breath. Those are imprinted on our inner child and those then manifest a response. And you say, well, what is the response? So we have fight, flight, fawn, or freeze. So what'll end up happening is that when you're triggered, your fight response, so that might be being angry or being controlling, or being the bully in the situation, or being narcissistic, or having a behavior. That's your fight response being triggered. Your flight response, and this is something that for me, that my trauma has taken me to, right? And I have to work really hard to not be in this, is the workaholic, or the overthinker, or the person that falls into panic and anxiety, or having a difficulty sitting still, or this one is something that I'm still working through to this day, is perfection. You can go into the fawn, which is the person who is the people pleaser. This person exhibits, this manifests in their life by having kind of a lack of identity. They kind of just become a chameleon. And in part, they become a chameleon because of safety. You have to become what you have to become so that you can move around safely. Or they might be overwhelmed really quickly. Or it might become codependent. And then the final one is freeze, where you have a difficulty making decisions or you find yourself to be stuck. Or there's this disassociation when all the chaos is happening around you and you literally leave your body while all the things are happening and you're just a shell. That can result in you being isolated or numb. So again, the question of the day then becomes, in what way do you manifest a response? Because the thing is that the way that we should be manifesting response is from like a healed and actualized self, the person that has the tools and the resources for inner safety. But until we get there, we have to be able to identify what are the responses that we're having to the conflict and the trauma and the emotional shortcomings that we have.
All right, so let me ask a question. All right, so we got the inner child, the inner critic, the inner, is it overparent? What is it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so in that inner overparent, is any of the parenting good? Like, a lot of the things that I heard you mention were things that would cause a negative or impact negative self-image.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So is it possible for that inner parent to actually affirm anything within you?
Mm-hmm. The protective inner parent is a mixture of how you are parented, right? So, of course, I focus on the ways that the deficits in parenting kind of influence us. But also, we know that we don't just receive trauma from our families. Mm-hmm. We also receive strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And so those strengths might come out in the fact of you being confident or might having a sense of self, or they might come out with you feeling like you can do and conquer anything, right? It might come out in you knowing how to rest or knowing that you don't have to be perfect, right? But it's a mixture. But generally, society is going to zero in on all the ways that the trauma is impacting you. And unfortunately, because the trauma impacts us the way that it does, we usually don't use our strengths. We usually lean on the weaknesses and how to improve those.
Wow. So even as you discuss it, I'm imagining a road with a bunch of off ramps, right? And so what I realized that a lot of people and people listening to this might also realize and recognize in their own pattern that they take the exit too soon. So you did the work to uncover the deep-seated feeling or the deficit at all, and then you took the exit ramp and you didn't continue the interrogation, or you got to lifting it up, and then you said, and here's the plan that I'll implement to change my internal narrative or to begin to raise my awareness so that I can change my behavior. If you're not aware of your behavior, you can hardly ever change it. And you did it for 30 days, or it started to look like you got what you wanted. And then you took the off ramp too soon. So it's like, I'm just imagining this road where you do steps one and two, but you jump off before step three. And really, I've seen people who struggle with it's painful, or they're trying to leapfrog in the process. Because if you don't do the work to change your internal narrative, I just feel like the negative self-critique piece is so close to you that as soon as you try to make amends or make some progress, that voice can come in and just drain all your energy and all of your forward progress. And again, I feel like some people discover this in that isolation that you just described, but some people just, they become aware in these, how they're interacting with other people. I know some people who couldn't touch what was going on in their childhood until they had children. So, you know, and really get in touch with, I do not want to be this type of parent. And the parents, like you said, and to Mike's point, you know, the parents have actually done well by you, all things considered, but they could not have done certain things that well, especially if they're rooted in generational trauma. Yeah. So, you know, this pushes us into conflict with self, conflict with others. Like, so where are the next steps? How is someone, it just seems like so much to manage. How do we do this effectively? All this self-improvement.
You know, I loved your analogy in terms of looking at the road, right? Like the turnoff point, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things that the Bible, that Psalm 23 reminds us is that though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that I will fear no evil. But the passage does not say, though I walk around, though I walk under, though I skip over. It says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And so because of that, when we exegete that passage, right, when we pull some meaning from it, it's you have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through it. So to say, as in this conversation, it's going to be hard, and there's things that come with trying to uproot, dismantle a system to even include
absolutely
not just like a social structure system, but our family systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first part about going through this is knowing, as Psalm 23 talks about, is that your rod and your staff will comfort me. That we're pulling on the hand of the divine to give us not only comfort, but to give us direction in terms of how we do this. So I think before I give any more advice is that as you're listening and things are coming up and being uprooted for you, you're asking yourself, You're asking the divine, what direction should I take now? What direction? Because again, we can talk theories and all these things all day, but I want you to center back in into yourself and your connection to the divine, right? Your connection to your spiritual self, and ask, what path should I take? Now, one of the things I want to give you is the fact that in order to turn the page and to tell a new story, is that we have to begin to tell ourselves new stories. Mm-hmm. So this is that moment when, insert trigger. So if my trigger is somebody, I don't have a hard time receiving constructive feedback, but I have a hard time not taking whatever feedback I receive personally. Mm. Like, and that triggers, because we're being honest, and this is the Say It With Your Chest ministry here. Say it with your chest. That triggers my perfectionism. So if somebody even gives me something, I'll hear them and I'm like, okay, I'll improve this. But then I'll spend the next 3 days like, I should have this better. I didn't do this right. And so when my perfectionism is triggered, the story I'm making this mean is that I did a bad job. And that's not what it is. What I want to do is, this is where we put in our pattern of behavior and say, what I want to do is be able to take feedback and know that it's not personal. So instead, what I'm choosing to do is to be seen for being a human being, for being seen as not somebody that has to maintain a perfection standard. And then I take a moment to myself and say, okay, right now, what do I need? What do I need in this moment? Do I need affirmation? Do I need reassurance that I'm doing okay? Do I need someone to kick me in the gear and say, like, stop self-loathing, right? And then I go to the next part, is like, what supports do I need? What support do I need right now to help me through this trigger? Because we're trying to look at this from like a fix the whole family, but this is like day by day, moment by moment. What do I need to support me so that I can allow myself to be seen through this moment to get to the next moment? That right there is not only going to help us connect with our pain, but it also helps us connect with the story that's around it so that we can then root it and move on. But you have to be able to stop and retell a different story. And that's what I call narrative switching. We have to switch the narrative that we tell ourselves.
To hear it described so clean while also living it is almost a little surreal, because so much work has gone into the state of mind that I find myself in for what I'm facing in my life right now. But I can relate to finally not having jumped off the road too quickly to really reach the intended destination. Had I jumped off too early, and the whole idea of you got to go through it, I remember wondering why I had to, with all that I thought I was, all of these external things, cloaks, if you will. I'm going to hide myself from you this way. I'm going to hide myself from you this way. I'm going to put on a nice purple cloak. You know what I mean? I'm going to distract you. I'm going to do everything. Yeah. And then it's almost as if I ran out of coping mechanisms. There was nothing big enough. There was no, I'm thankful that I didn't find a vice bigger than my issues, because I got frustrated. So I said, well, dang, there's certain things I'm never going to do, certain places I'm never going to go, certain behaviors I'm never going to display. And that it all has to do with who you are, how you've been conditioned to behave in certain situations. And then most people have a compass, and mine was kicking in because I had no direction. So, you know, it was but so much drifting I was going to do. But because I finally stayed on the road toward the actual real destination, the scenery looks different for me. So I remember when it was bleak looking outside. I remember when I think I was driving past burnt out fields, if you will, because some of this stuff you have to slash and burn. It has to go away. And there's no redeeming quality to these old things, right? These old things fall away. People used to say, renew your mind. And I say, how? But truly, it is a process. It is not a one-step event. It wasn't I woke up with a new mindset. It's the constant testing and removal of those things that don't edify where I want to be versus where I've been. And to be doing that in my lifetime while also watching someone in the twilight of their lifetime work out those last few things. It's amazing. It's an amazing observance of faith to be leaning on nothing but God's promises that it is as worked out as you could make it. But then to just feel extreme power that I still have time to have a better future. Can't do anything about the background. Mm-hmm. You can just choose to have a better future. We're talking about the ultimately the choices that we make with what we have. And I don't think people, I mean, some people crush under that, but that's literally all we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What choices are you going to make with the energy that can make your life better?
Yes. And, you know, I think when we think about, as you kind of mentioned, that there, you know, this process of releasing, that's the hardest. And it's going to take and may take the most time, but I want mm-hmm. you to know that there is no completion timeline to get there. And while you are in the process of releasing and letting go and refocusing and re-engaging and redirecting energy, you have to be easy on yourself. Again, the more we hold on to these events, either childhood events or adult events, the more they become a part of our identity and they make less room for us mm-hmm. to grow and form new and healthy, beneficial ones. And the life that we want, the life that we're called to, the life that we are deserving and worthy of, we can never access. Mm. We don't let go of these attachments that have us stuck and move on.
I've heard the question before, who are you without your pain? If you did not ever feel that thing, who would you be? Mm-hmm. And I've seen that question stump people. The question you asked me earlier, when some people say, how are you? And we're already preconditioned to say fine without really any thought. But when you stop and you ask somebody, well, how is your heart? And how that almost arrests them.
Yeah.
Because you are asking for a deeper interrogation of how you feel. These are the types of things that, you know, I feel like they're small trainers to help you not be so scared of the answers that might follow. Mm-hmm. I just had a conversation yesterday that there are days where I'm not okay. And because I love myself enough to be honest, I can put that out there so that people who are dealing with me can deal with my true self. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to deal with my representative that I send out to say that everything is fine and everything is okay. Mm-hmm. But being able to be honest, even about not feeling well or not doing well, is a reflection of how much I love myself ultimately, because I've reclaimed the truth about my feelings. Mm-hmm. Culturally, sometimes I believe that people, you know, we wear the mask and people don't realize that that mask is pervasive. And some people don't realize that their mask has adhesed to their skin and mm-hmm. they're not taking it off anymore and making people deal with a mask that doesn't match their heart. So these questions, this work is, it doesn't end.
We ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, it doesn't end, but it's so worth it. I just feel like life will give you circumstances where you can do these reflections mm-hmm. and come up with something different almost every time, depending on what, you know, or realize that things really are resolved. There's mm-hmm. nothing like something coming up and you saying, wow, that's resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for most of this podcast, we have done the difficult, intimate work of deconstructing our beliefs and then trying to reconstruct something from the pieces. And that's hard work. It challenges you in ways that make you uncomfortable. It leaves you questioning, where are you going to end up? Where is this going to land? How am I going to move mm-hmm. forward with this? The work that you're describing, Nick, is even more intimate, because it's not a deconstructing of your belief, it's a deconstructing of yourself. It's a deconstructing of the things that are you, because you've carried them so long, that have led to who you are in this moment. That's not necessarily who you will be in the next, but who you are is who you've been. And so the work of deconstructing that, you're absolutely right. You got to be gentle with that, because you're going to suck at that, like, for a long time. You're going to be so bad in the moment.
You're going to be over it.
Recognizing when these traumas occurred, what it's doing to me in this moment, how to ask these questions that you're giving us, and then doing something about that. You can't do that in a few seconds during a conversation unless you've been doing it for years and decades. And so we have to, one, start, which I'm so mm-hmm. thankful that you are giving actual text to the questions that Amira asked, like, how do you do this? Most people don't know how to do this. Like, mm-hmm. you don't know how to forgive. Somebody says, forgive, how? I don't know. We're talking about healing. How? like this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, of course, I always have questions. I'm always asking questions. So we're going to get to those in just a moment. But I want to say, to your point, Mike, that a lot of this work is, as much as the work is self-reflective, it's also communal. And the reality is that trauma doesn't just happen to individuals, it happens to communities. And so I think the work in healing the trauma and healing the disruptions that we've faced or that we've found is to be able to connect with community. And so I think that, again, it's really important to make sure that as we talk about trauma is that our ability to feel safe and supported and seen, that also can happen in community. And as such, our healing can't just be self-care. It can't just be self-healing. It has to be in community. We have to heal with others. And so when we think about church community, as people of color or any other marginalized group, we need each other. And so with that being said, I want us to think about the fact also that when we do this work, that you have to use the resources around you, you know, that provide you love and care and support and affirmation. And I want you to remember that if the people in your life can't help you elevate to your highest self, then make sure you don't trust them with such a task as you seek to heal. If the people in your life cannot help you elevate to your highest self, don't trust them with your healing. Instead, I want you to enlist the help of loved ones and trusted friends and clergy, a therapist, trained professionals, as you seek to rebuild broken pieces. Because forgiveness is not a singular event, but it is a repetition and acknowledgement that the past can't be any different, but you get to determine what the future is. So I want you to grab your notebook again, because we talked about having a notebook last time, and I hope you have one now. And I want you just to write down these questions, but I also want you to write down what comes up immediately for you and then maybe come back to it, okay? The first question is, what events in your life have disrupted your ability to see clearly? What events in your life have disrupted your ability to see clearly? I then want you to ask yourself, how have those events impacted how you show up in the world? How has trauma, how has dysfunction, how has deficits, how has not living with your dad as a kid, how has seeing your parents divorce impacted how you show up in the world? What relationship do you have to the people or the person or the systems that caused you trauma? What relationship do you have to the people, persons, systems? So if that means that you were shamed for you coming into your own in terms of your sexuality, what is your relationship to church now? What is your relationship to the divine? What is your relationship to those deacons or church mothers who said the things that they said to you? And I'm going to take it a further. Like, what do you want that relationship to look like today? Because remember, I said you have agency. Agency is the power to decide which way you're going to steer the ship. So how do you want that relationship to look like today? I want you to take a moment and pause your spirit. And I want you to write down, what do you feel your spirit telling you to do? What is your spirit telling you to do right now? Ask yourself, who and what do you need to forgive? Who do you need to forgive? What do you need to forgive? Ask yourself, what will happen to future generations? These are generations in and out of your family, if you don't resolve your trauma. What will happen to future generations if you don't resolve your trauma? What resources and supports do you need to call into the conversation? So remember, I talked about experts and therapists and community resources. Who do you have to call into this conversation as you do this work? Because again, you can't do this work by yourself. Mm-hmm. Finishing up, how will you prioritize self-care in your life? How will you stop to prioritize yourself as you do this healing work? And lastly, how will you implement communal care? So the help of family and friends and ancestors and the church and the community in your life in ways that are meaningful and productive. Now, again, we can have people around us, but that's just a bunch of background noise. What ways do you want community in your life that's meaningful and productive?
Yes.
I told you I had questions.
So the thing is,
you in my business.
Like, I just want to carry with you with me everywhere, every day, and just ask these questions and remind me, slow down, think about what's going on, figure out what's happening. So for the people who want to know more, want to learn more, do more, what do you got going on, Nick, that so the people can get more of Nick Gaines and understand where you're going, how you're moving, all of that?
Yeah. So I've been wanting to, probably actually since I was a kid, well, not a kid, I take that back. Well, no, since I was a kid, my mom used to drop me off at Barnes & Noble and I would just like go and read for hours. I've been wanting to write a book. I've been wanting to write a book since I can remember. And so I am now in the process of writing a memoir. And I think a lot of times memoirs focus on the story of the person, which obviously I think I want people to have an understanding of who I am and why the work I do is so important. But more importantly, I want my memoir to serve as both a mirror and a window to what's going on. So a mirror as in understanding that, like, you know, there are experiences that I've had that you may not have ever had, right? A mirror in the sense of like, or a window in the sense that you get to look in and see, as I'm talking about, trying to work through understanding myself as a Black man, work through understanding myself in my queer identity, and work through being a veteran, and work through being a dad, and work through various traumas, right? Because you might see yourself and or your humanity in that, but also I see it as an opportunity for it to be a mirror for you to look in at yourself and to figure out what work is it that you need to do? What ways do you need to excavate your own life so that you can be the highest, most whole and healed version of yourself? And so I'm writing a memoir.
Is it titled yet, or are you still working through it?
It is. It is titled. The memoir is titled Head Above Water. And I think for me, when I think about Head Above Water, I think we live in a world in which, especially for me as a Black man, in which there's so many ways in which people and systems try to really just choke the life out of us. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, in doing my internal work and healing my childhood self and my adult self, it was really a matter of trying to fight all the things to survive and keep my head above water. Mm-hmm. And so I want this to be a matter of people being able to read this and figure out what are the things that I've had to fight through and know that at the end of the day that I can really keep my head above water.
Wow.
Listen, y'all, follow this man, Nicholas Gaines, NICKOLASGAINES, on all of the socials. He's there. He's doing great work. He's been here, I want to say, for about 7 or 8 episodes. We have multiple sex in the Bible episodes. We have an episode about masculinity, about mental health. We've done, he's come here to share himself and his gift with us. And every show after Nick leaves is my new favorite show, because I love this man. I love what he does, his work. I love how he shows up in all of his spaces as a dad, as an advocate, as someone who exhibits God in the way that we were called to, as someone who shows you what God sees in you. Like, who can say, who can speak to and affirm those things in your life, even if you're just looking at his life. It's beautiful. So I thank you, Nick, for coming to sit with us, to share with us, and to heal with us. And I'll give you the last word.
Y'all, as we heal, our children heal. And their children heal. And their children heal. And this is how we break curses. This is how we absolve generational trauma. This is how we create rich legacies. This is how we leave our children with more than we were left with. This is how we honor our families. And so my prayer for you is that you will see yourself the way that the divine sees you. I bind every work that sets to impede your forward progress. I rescind every negative word and energy that has been spoken over you. I call the universe right now to grant you radical healing from your trauma, from your disruptions, from anything that is impeding your ability to be your highest, most healed, and loved self. I command healing in your thoughts, in your paradigms, in your self-esteem, in your alignments, healing in your choices, in your speech, in your communication patterns, healing in your responses, and healing in you. I summon love that enables you to be seen, heard, felt, and to grow. I pray that joy is a tangible expression and practice in your life, and I call forth deep, restorative, and full rest. You are worthy and deserving of good things, and that includes wholeness, healing, and abundance.
Thank you again, Nick. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.